Good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. It is a Monday, December 19th, 2016. 12:14 coming up on 12:15 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Just a few short days until Christmas, about 6 days. And sadly, in the last week, we have lost a lot of legends from the movie industry, medical profession, space travel, of course, in Ohio. John Glenn, age 95, left us. Last night we learned Zsa Zsa Gabor, at age 99, passed away. And on Saturday, a friend of this program, a gentleman who was on twice, he was on back in May of this year, Dr. Henry Heimlich, the inventor of the Heimlich maneuver, was on back in May discussing how he had saved somebody's life at his retirement home with his maneuver, the Heimlich maneuver. So it was quite a shock this past weekend, even though he was 96, to hear of the passing of Dr. Henry Heimlich on Saturday at age 96, as I say. Joining us to remember him is a gentleman I like a whole lot. He's been on this program before, and you know him. He was friends with Johnny Carson. He was on The Tonight Show. He was at WNBC-TV in New York for 25 years, as they used to call him, crack meteorologist, Dr. Frank Field. Dr. Field, how are you?
I'm fine. Good afternoon.
Good to speak with you. Dr. Field, tell me how your relationship with Dr. Heimlich came to be.
Well, I was doing a program in New York, a weekly program, which aired on Sunday afternoons. It was called Research Project. And the program was aimed at influencing or educating the public on the way scientists work and how they do their research. It was a sort of, I would say, a show and tell of medical research. And I would invite doctors to come on and spend a full half hour. Dr. DeBakey on heart surgery, and there were all kinds of areas we explored, some quite complex. And one session I had was with Dr. Henry Heimlich. He had published a paper in which he described how he could take a cancerous esophagus, that's the tube through which you eat, the food goes down that tube into the stomach, how he could take a defective esophagus and rebuild it so that people could then begin to eat or get vitamins or whatever the doctor wanted inserted into the doctor with ease. He would take a segment of the stomach and reconstruct it into a tube. And we did that program, and it was quite interesting. Had some nice results, people writing in and asking how to get to him, the usual. And about 5 years after that, I got this note from Dr. Heimlich. Strangely enough, he said he had a way of preventing 5,000 deaths a year, and that was from people who choked in restaurants. And it was a very common thing that happened in this country. And I was quite taken aback because I had never really thought of people choking and dying and then being misdiagnosed as having a heart attack. And that's how I met him and introduced the program. He had written to me, sent me a copy of a piece that he had written and submitted to the Journal of the American Medical Association describing his hypothesis that you would squeeze, use a bear hug, and out would pop the offending item that's stuck in the throat. And I thought that was a rather interesting thing. And since he had published this in JAMA, and there was no proof at that point, there were no studies, no animal studies or anything, which led to a problem later on. And so I invited him to join us on the 5 o'clock news, where we did the demonstration with the anchor man, and that was the end of it. Well, about a week or so later, suddenly I get a call from a gentleman in Brooklyn who owned a large oil distribution company. He and his brother were having luncheon at a rather posh restaurant, and his brother suddenly stopped breathing because he had a chunk of meat stuck in his throat, and he saved his life. So it kind of evolved that way, and I got hooked on to the Heimlich maneuver.
Dr. Field, it's kind of interesting because Dr. Heimlich, throughout his life, faced many critics for the Heimlich maneuver, a lot of those being in the medical profession, and even at one point his son, one of his sons, had turned on him. Why do you think those things happened? Why was there such opposition, if it did work, from the medical community?
Well, you know, it's not uncommon. Strangely enough, I've had that happen with other physicians, other researchers too. When you come up with something new, you're making a drastic change in a profession, something that people sort of don't shy away from. They've been trained to do certain things a certain way, and that's the way they want to do it. There was an instance where it took 10 years to do something that was so important, and what the doctor did in those 10 years was really suffer through a period where he was being ignored, where he was being literally abused, and that was a gentleman by the name of Dr. Charles Kellman. Now, Dr. Kellman came up with a new way of doing cataract surgery. He took what was a horrible thing, a piece of surgery that occurred, because at that time, in the 60s and 70s, if you needed a cataract operation, they had to remove that lens, a tiny button collar-sized lens from your eye, and they would cut the cornea, the clear part, wide open, a big circle, and lift it up and yank the thing out. And the first improvement in doing that was they froze, instead of yanking it out, they would freeze with a pointer the cataract lens itself and then pull it out. That was about as far as they got in cataract surgery. He came along and said, I can get that cataract out of the eye easily by dissolving it with a needle using ultrasound and suck it out, and you won't have a big cut. You won't have to be in a hospital for a week with your head in support, unable to move, which was a terrible thing for elderly because some of them didn't survive. They had heart attacks, blood circulation problems, lying in bed, supine for hours and days. So it took him 10 years, and the way he did it was reminded me of what Dr. Heimlich did. Now, I wasn't concerned with other areas of Dr. Heimlich's methodology. He had other ideas that I'd never touched. But this particular thing just set me off. He had no background studies, no animal studies. He simply came up with this hypothesis. Squeeze do a bear hug that forces the air up back in the lungs, and that will act like a champagne bottle. Pop it out. And he was right, but there were no studies. And I can understand why the profession attacked him and said, this is nonsense. When we did it, when I did the first one, the story on the first one, I was taken aback. Within 4 or 5 days, we suddenly found we saved somebody's life. Then it and added up in that month, we saved 7, 8, 9 lives with a couple of children, adults, self-saving. And I thought, yeah, there's no scientific background on this. There's been no animal studies. And you don't need it because it's proved. You do that, it'll work. And so we began a campaign of promoting the Heimlich maneuver. And that's more or less where I zeroed in. And that kept growing because by the end of the year, we had several hundred people who were saved. And letters came in continually from people who used it. Even children in some schools began to use it. So he really took a beating, and wisely, he, like Dr. Kellman, turned to the media. They turned to television. Both of them were part of my promotions, which worked. And then finally, after 5 years or so, the combat with the American Red Cross and with other professional organizations, the Orthopedic Society in New York, New Jersey, they began to accept it. And still, after 10 years, they wouldn't refer to it as the Heimlich maneuver because he went public and made a big showcase out of it. Incidentally, Dr. Kelman appeared on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, and also Dr. Heimlich appeared on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. So they were using just, it seems, the same kind of approach as Mr. Trump, the newly elected president, has been using. Push it in the media. Get as much publicity for what it is that you're trying to get through, because your own guys are not going to accept it.
You know,
so it was for all fortuitous, and that's happened in the 20-some-odd years that I did that half-hour program to several professionals who were ignored by their peers because they didn't want to buy into a new innovative approach.
You know, Dr. Field, something that I found interesting, and they just replayed that Tonight Show with Dr. Heimlich about 3 or 4 months ago, which was interesting, with Johnny Carson. But he did become a media personality. He did go on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson back in the days when there were only 4 channels. He went on The David Letterman Show. He was on The Donahue Show. Why do you think he became a media personality? You mentioned Dr. DeBakey there, who did great, great work. But even he, I would hasten to believe, was not as known in the media as much as Dr. Heimlich.
Well, it's obvious that if you learn how to use the media, television, radio, newspapers, if you know how to work them and impress them, it gets into every home. Everyone begins to realize it. It's one of these celebrity kind of things that will evolve. And for many doctors, they refuse to do that kind of thing. They're successful in other ways. You have a doctor who gets a Nobel Award and no one's ever heard of him, but now he becomes famous. And the reason he now becomes famous for his work is because the media has used him. What we're dealing with greatly extends out into what the media, which now includes internet and all the other areas that never existed back then, this kind of celebrity is quite common, from football players to God knows great scientists. And if you know how to use the media, you can become a governor, you can become a president, you can go anywhere. It's an incredible tool which can be used for many purposes. And Dr. Heimlich realized, I assume, that the more he did go on air and demonstrate his procedure, which is quite, you know, simple, and give cases where one's lives can be saved, why he would be accepted. But he couldn't get past the science, the medical establishment initially. The American Red Cross absolutely refused Dr. Heimlich's thoughts and called him referred to him as an outsider, or even worse. It's one of those areas where 2 scientists, 3 scientists, 4 scientists, each one learns that, you know, I can't get through this barrier, and the only way I can get there is by jumping the barrier and going straight to the public, which is exactly what happened in this electoral year. There's a man with no background who suddenly appears and goes directly on the internet and says, I don't need the media, and then begins to use the media. And Dr. Heimlich, when it came to this procedure, really had to face a great deal of opposition. And the only way he could overcome it, obviously, was go public. We began using the Heimlich maneuver. I didn't really honestly believe that it would have such an outstanding success in saving lives. But when it got up to the end of 1 year of doing the program, introducing it, sending out about all kinds of booklets on how to do the Heimlich, and then ending up and testifying in New York State, in Albany, and also in New York City, for a bill that forced the restaurants to put signs up, suddenly Heimlich became a household word. and he succeeded in something that he never would have gotten through otherwise.
Now, one of the articles I saw over the weekend, the headline was Heimlich Maneuver Nearly Gets NBC's Crack Meteorologist Fired and Then Saves His Life. What is the story behind that?
Well, that was interesting. It never occurred to me. You know, I was on the look and I was thinking, boy, every time I went to a restaurant, I'd look around every now and again and see if everybody was okay, wondering, I wonder if someone would happen to maybe begin choking here. Would I jump up and run over and save? It'll be an opportunity for me to try it and see if it works myself. Never happened. About 15 years after we began the entire program of promoting the Heimlich as one way of saving lives in choking, which was quite common in those days, in the 60s and 70s, I went to dinner with a fellow named Warner Wolf, who was our sportscaster, and we were sending off a news director who had left for better parts, and so we were in the restaurant, and it was about 10:15, and he said, hey, we better eat quickly because we've got to get on the air at 11, and we both ordered and quickly began eating. I ordered a steak. Unfortunately, a chunk of steak, I guess it took too big a bite, got stuck in my throat, and there I was. Couldn't gasp, couldn't drink water. Thought, if I get up and run out of here, I'm going to die because there's nobody to help me. So I did the sign of a hand pointing at the throat, that I had something stuck in my throat. And Warner Wolf jumped up and ran around. He knew what he was doing. The first time he missed it. Second, I'm saying to myself, oh my God, I'm going to die because this guy doesn't know how to do it right. And I pointed at my stomach. He did it again, and out popped this chunk of meat. And I was, it seemed to me a half hour, when it was only a matter of a couple of minutes. And afterward, I said, thank God, what took you so long? And he laughed and said, it only took a couple of seconds. And I said, well, I'm glad you knew what to do. And he said, well, I saw you demonstrating it a couple of years, way back when, and I knew how to do it. And that saved my life. Now, there were people in the this large dining area. Several of them saw it, and one of them happened to be a photographer for the Daily News who got a shot of us actually performing the maneuver, and it hit all the papers the next day. So Warner Wolf saved my life some 16 or 17 years after I started doing the Heimlich maneuver. And I wrote something to a friend of mine. I not only was rewarded by promoting the Heimlich maneuver, by getting a special Emmy award for the doing the procedure, but I also saved my own life. And that was, it hit all the papers. That the guy who introduced the Heimlich and pushed it so hard for so many years had his own life saved by the maneuver itself.
Dr. Field, I want you to think about this question for a minute. What was Henry Heimlich the man like, and where is his place in medical history? But while you think on that for a second, I do want to play this little bit of video here. You'll hear the audio at home here on radio of the story of the Heimlich maneuver saving somebody's life. So let's take a listen to this.
The near tragic incident occurred at the Brooklyn Club in Brooklyn Heights. Albert Evans explains.
Yesterday, while having lunch, I suddenly heard my brother gasp my name, and I looked and immediately realized that he was choking. So I jumped from the seat, went around, grabbed him like this twice, and then he kind of said, okay. And I said, is the food out? And he said, yes. And he was all right. Our friends at the table here asked how I knew what to do. And I told them that just the week before, I had seen a program with Dr. Heinrich, who developed the technique for dislodging something from the windpipe on Dr. Field's program. And they had done actual demonstrations, and having seen it, I knew exactly what to do.
Richard Evans describes what went through his mind as he was gasping for breath.
I was aware that the food was lodged in my throat, and I was completely helpless to either get it out one way or the other. I was conscious of what was going on. And the one important thing was just not to fall to pieces, to keep my mind going.
And again, that was a story of Dr. Henry Heimlich's maneuver saving a life. Dr. Field, what was Henry Heimlich the man like, and where is his place in medical history?
Well, before I try to answer that particular story that you aired was the very first Heimlich maneuver that occurred after we had done the demonstration. And it happened about 3 days after we did it. And it convinced me. That was really the one that set me off, because I still had some doubts in my mind, since there had been no animal experiments or any other experiments. But I felt that I could air this description with Dr. Heimlich to show his maneuver, because he had published it in a medical journal, and I made sure that it was public knew that it was his hypothesis that this would work and save a life, and we demonstrated it. Now, a little bit, I believe that the gentleman that you just heard 3 days later would save his brother, then call us and say, "I saved my brother's life because I saw what you did on the news, Frank, and I'd like to send him a check for $10,000. And I said, "What?" And he said, "Yes, I want him to promote this. I want him to get out there and let other people know that it worked. It worked for me, and I saved my brother." So that was the first one, and that was really what triggered me off. And it began to work. So as far as I know, it's funny, I'm at one of my grandchildren's house right now, and the phone is going off on the other end. I hope it's not disturbing.
Oh, no, not bad at all. You know what? Give us your thoughts on Henry Heimlich, the man, and how do you think he'll go?
Well, I think with my acquaintance with Henry, he was driven. He was really, I don't know what other areas he was involved in. I know he developed several interesting technical surgical approaches, because he was a thoracic surgeon. But when it came to the maneuver itself, he was absolutely driven to get it through. He would do anything because he knew it saved lives. And he was. We were, by the end of the year, on our promotion retelling stories about the Heimlich, we had several thousand, it seemed, letters and telegrams and phone calls listed of people who had used the maneuver. And I thought he was just one brave, interesting, innovative doctor. And I'd love to meet with him and have dinner with him once or twice. He was always full of ideas in all kinds of directions, and I admired him greatly.
I do want you to answer this final question, how he's going to be remembered. But before we do that, I do want to play an interview of Dr. Henry Heimlich on this show about 4 years ago. Here we go.
Many soldiers in Vietnam carried it. There were no medical people there. They carried them in their pocket in a sterile envelope, the Heimlich valve attached to a sterile tube. And when your buddy was shot in the chest, you put the tube in the bullet hole, and the valve allowed the air and blood to come out, and nothing go back in. And it saved hundreds and hundreds of lives.
Well, Dr. Heimlich, I'm sure you have 100 stories like that. That it's such an amazing legacy. And when the book comes out in the future, promise to come back with us.
Yes. Let me tell you that there were 130,000 Heimlich chest drain valves used throughout the world today every year.
Amazing.
And people come into with a collapsed lung from a bubble burst or something like that. They put a tube in the emergency room with the Heimlich valve. They go home and come back in 2 weeks, and the tube is taken out.
Well, as I said, Dr. Heimlich, you have a tremendous legacy. I think Norman Vincent Peale was right. And It's just amazing. And like I said, please do come back when the book comes out.
And that book was written and did come out a few years ago. Dr. Henry Heimlich on this show a few years ago. Dr. Frank Field, how is Dr. Henry Heimlich going to be remembered?
Well, his name will live on. It's the procedure itself is the simplest of all procedures. He has his name on it. Every medical student down the road is going to know the procedure, and it's part of our safety system now. So he'll go on in history as the guy who saved hundreds and hundreds of thousands of lives by a very simple procedure that he developed, and one which did not require animal studies or any great scientific. It cost nothing to come up with it except a little brain power, and he succeeded in doing that.
And very,
so he will be known, I guess, down in history as the guy who continues to save all these lives.
And the interesting story is the last time he was on this show and the last time he made national news was back in May of this year for saving a woman in his retirement complex with his own maneuver.
Well, there you go. He finally got his chance.
What a legacy. Dr. Frank Field...
And more important is I owe my life to the man.
Literally.
That's absolutely. I know I would not have survived if there wasn't a Heimlich maneuver. I was unable to breathe. I was beginning to collapse. I knew enough not to run out and hide in a telephone booth or try to throw up or anything because I couldn't. And if that sportscaster in front of me hadn't watched me do it on the air several times, I wouldn't have been here today.
And we're glad you are. NBC's correct meteorologist, Frank Field, Dr. Frank Field, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Remembering the legendary Dr. Henry Heimlich. Isn't that an interesting story? Sean Kraft and Terry Tackett still both here today. Well, what do you make? Dr. Frank Field remembering Dr. Henry Heimlich.
Sounds like the guy was kind of an innovator. You know, I mean, he did a lot of great things in the
medical. Now, you know, to do the Heimlich maneuver, you have to get your hands balled up together, go behind the person.
And push up.
But you push up, but you get them under the sternum. You can bust their sternum if you do it wrong.
Yeah.
And if the person is too large to get your hands around them.
Like me?
No, that's true. I'm just saying there are people who are too large. You don't want them to choke to death.
All right.
You bend them over a chair. You bend them over a chair, the back of a chair, and then you hit them in the back.
Really?
Yeah, because the chair, where the back of the chair hits them, is like where your hands would be. And then you hit them on the back, and that knocks the wind.
I know you hit babies in the back. I didn't know you hit the humans, though.
No, you got to bend them over the chair first. Dr. Henry Heimlich, going at age 96. What a legend.
You know what I found interesting in that interview?
Do tell.
No, Dr. Fields, he was choking himself on his own show that he, you know, taught people how to. That was interesting.
Yeah.
And you know, the guy saved his life. And I thought that was interesting. When he said that.
Well, you can choke anytime, that's for certain.
No, definitely. I mean.
Them chicken nuggets or whatever you.
Yeah.
The lights. I thought I asked Dr. Heimlich what he wanted to be remembered for. I'm trying to find that here in the.
You know, I about choked one time.
Interview.
Oh, did you?
The Heimlich chest drain valve. It was the.
Dr. Heimlich felt like the talk, I'll say that.
The first person, one of our Chandler area.
Boy, I'll tell you, that's a.
I had a hundred on our site.
If we were prepared, we'd have this ready to go.
World weatherman.
Welcome to live radio.
Was after the moon and a old crow.
Working on other things this morning, you don't realize.
Yeah.
Boy, I'll tell you, he was a talker.
Overseas.
God bless him.
You can just let him go until you do your stuff and come back.
Yeah, come back 6 months.
It's going to go down as the Heimlich maneuver.
Oh,
it's going to go down that it saved people's lives. You are Dr. Henry Heimlich. You invented it, came up with it, wrote about it. What is your legacy?
Well, my legacy, and by the way, it will be out in the book in 2 or 3 months. The book is called Heimlich's Maneuvers.
Good title.
Yes. I think the thing that I can say to you is that I have done many things that are known to the doctors and are still used to save lives. And I've had such a wonderful life. Nolan Vincent Peale said I've saved more lives, and he put this in print. I've saved more lives than any other living person. I have many things that are known in medicine that are saving lives today beyond the maneuver. And I'd like to tell you about some if you wish.
Go right ahead.
And that is how the man wanted to be remembered who left us on Saturday at age 96, a good old age, though.
Yes, that's a long age.
Norman Vincent Peale said he saved more lives than anybody on the planet.
Wow, that's...
Maybe he has.
It's a pretty good statement.
I mean. And you know, I thought it was interesting as well. He got to use his own tool for the first time.
Back in May.
Yeah.
At the retirement home. That now, can you imagine when somebody said, a woman's choking, and you got Dr. Heimlich sitting in the room? Yeah. Well, who should we go to?
Yeah, that's right.
What do we do? $10,000 question here.
Yeah, do we perform the Heimlich maneuver?
Does anybody here know the Heimlich maneuver?
Yeah.
Oh, Dr. Heimlich.
Dr. Heimlich.
Yes, yeah. You do.
Yeah.
Again, 740-383-9944. If anybody has a question they'd like to ask or bring up on the air, we always love to hear those. Maybe somebody out there has saved a life with the Heimlich maneuver. Remember, legendary actor Bill Macy coming up next hour with some Christmas favorites.
One of what they used to do back in the old days, you know, people have been choking for many, many years. Before this Heimlich maneuver was, people just die, I guess?
No, they lodge it out somehow.
Okay.
Used to be beat them on the back. That was the way to do it.
Or and jump on the stomach and start punching.
I think the Red Cross still believes that you hit them on the back. I don't think they ever adopted the Heimlich maneuver.
Mm. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh. Interesting.
So, God bless you, Dr.
Heimlich. You hit them straight on the back, or you do, like, push up in the back?
Do you push their back up?
I mean, like, you know how you, like, you have to, like, hit and
no,
push
you hit
up?
Them. Hit them.
You just hit it.
You just hit the back.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, you don't push the back up.
Well, I always thought when the kid, you have to take your, like,
see, this is why hopefully you've never been in one of these positions.
Well, no, why? I just saw it on TV. I thought, like, they take your palm in your hand, and you... Right, Terry? And when you smack the baby, you upwards, right?
Yeah.
That's what I always thought.
I think that's the way I understand it, yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
You're just trying to dislodge something in the windpipe.
You're not trying to break ribs?
No, you're not trying to dislocate a sternum.
That's right.
I don't know. I just thought maybe I didn't know you
would
just...
Would you really have the presence of mind if somebody was choking to save their life?
I would.
I've seen you panic.
Or would you grab their food off the table and say, well, they're not going to be eating that. I'm just kidding.
You won't want the rest of this. No, some people don't function well under stress. In their mind, they think they can do that.
Yeah.
Do you think you could do it?
I don't think I could do it, honestly.
Wouldn't you be afraid of busting their ribs?
Yeah, I would.
I don't know. Can they sue you if you bust their ribs?
Yes. Well, you haven't signed an affidavit before.
But wouldn't they be happy if they would be alive, though? I mean, you break a rib, you break a rib.
Depends how much you've hurt them in the process.
Yeah, that's right.
If you've ruptured their spleen and broke their ribs.
Well, I think you can break a rib when you're doing a CPR, too.
Well, yes, you can.
Yeah.
Sure.
But CPR is life or death.
Yeah.
Well, isn't choking?
I don't know. I mean, haven't you ever choked on, like, some water or something? And nobody had to come over and Heimlich.
I was telling you earlier, I about choked. I had my eyes.
You're going to hunk a Christmas ham this year.
I was gathering for air one day. Yeah, I choked on, what was it? It was a chicken nugget, actually. Believe it or not. And it got lodged, like, right here, and I just kept drinking water.
So this is why you have to chew.
I don't think it was very big. It just went down the wrong pipe.
Now, how many pipes are back there? Which pipe does the Heimlich maneuver go through?
It covers A and B, but C.
So how did you get it up?
Well, I tell you what, I kept coughing really, really, really hard. And I mean, I was red. I mean, I was beet red. And somehow I kept drinking water and finally just went down. Oh. I just kept coughing and drinking water and... just finally let loose or whatever it was. I don't know if it was like lodged up. I'm sure if it was probably a piece of like meat, like pork chop or something, probably wouldn't be that easy. Because chicken nuggets are kind of flimsier.
Greasy. They slide on down.
The crafty maneuver we call it.
Crafty.
No, but when you think about it, what a tremendous dedication and a tremendous legacy to a tremendous man. Absolutely. Dr. Henry Heimlich, and it was a pleasure to have him on this program many times.
Oh yeah.
Now, because Sean will be leaving here in 10 minutes, let's try to get back to our gun debate because that was sparking interest with the callers out there. And again, the telephone line is 740-383-9944. Now, basically, the point was. What?
You were worried about mass shootings. You think a lot of things have happened, so how are we going to stop them?
Well, I
Harry
really
thinks people's hands should be cut. We totally discounted that.
I honestly don't really know. Like, I guess somewhat we have to change the laws a little bit or something. I guess that's the only way you could do it. Because you can't take all the guns away. You can't chop people's fingers off in the United States because that's against our
constitution. But see, why do people always go to that? You can't take all the guns away. Now, murder is illegal, but nobody ever says, well, we can't get rid of all the murderers, so why don't we just make it legal? I never understand that answer. Because that's always the answer. You can't get all the guns. Okay. Well, that's probably true.
Well,
let's not fight the gun. You can't get all the needles. Forget the gun drug trouble. Just let it go on.
Yeah.
Well, you could. You're never going to stop it, but you can minimize it. I don't think just like crime. You're never going to stop all crime.
That's right. So why is that an excuse though that people give for not giving any laws?
Well, I ain't saying there should be some kind of law on the guns. That's not what I'm saying. Definitely, the background checks need to be a little bit tighter. Than they are, because there are some loopholes. I think they need to be fixed. But you know what? We have the president elect in there, and he's not going to do anything about it.
Yeah,
so.
But you know what the problem is here? President is not judge, jury, and executioner.
Sure.
There is a Congress.
Mm-hmm.
There's a Senate. There's a Supreme Court. Why does nobody have any?
Again, he's going to veto it.
Well, he can't veto the Supreme Court.
Well,
Supreme
no.
Court's final law of the land.
No, but how often does it go to the Supreme Court, though?
It's been to the Supreme Court, but the way they rule is the way they rule.
Well,
but the problem is
well, I know
why
a lot of the people that's involved, like for example, the NRA, are big contributors
well,
to,
that's
these
part of the
to these campaigns.
So there you go.
So that's why.
So is that where our gun law should be made? How much money you can give to a campaign?
No, I mean, certainly the NRA needs to look into more smarter. But, you know, they're making money over fists, so they're not going to budge at this point. I mean, it's not you could, you're not, you ain't going
to
convince
them. Now, you don't like cruelty to animals, right?
Oh, yeah.
So
definitely.
How do you feel about shooting a deer through the head?
I think that's sad.
Sad.
But people eat deer, so I don't.
So as long as you eat what you're cruel to, you're okay.
You know, that's, no, because that's not necessary, because you know, people in China eat dogs and cats.
We don't say that.
But an example is you have a sadness toward people who harm animals.
I do.
Okay. But my question is, I see people on Facebook with deers ripped apart that they've shot.
Yeah.
No problem there?
I do.
Hanging on their tree outside.
How about how they kill chickens? Ripping their neck.
I mean, I don't go as far as PETA goes, because PETA has. I disagree with some of the PETA laws, but I do disagree with
what PETA laws do you disagree with?
You know, about the chickens. You know, yes, I do agree with them. But you know, if you kill the chicken incorrectly and if you blow it up with, what they call that medicine.
Steroids
makes them bigger. I think that's wrong because they cut their beaks off and their legs, so they just get fatter and fatter and just kill over. And I think that's wrong, far as that goes. But we've been eating chicken for many, many years.
Well, nobody in PETA says you shouldn't eat chicken. They're just saying kill them properly.
Oh, really? I thought it was against the.
Oh no! A lot of people in PETA are vegetarian, but yeah. They're not telling you to be vegetarian.
Oh, okay. All right. So, because people have been eating deer for a long time. I think if you kill the deer in a proper way, in a humane way.
What's the proper way?
I'm not a hunter, but I think you got to kill it between the neck area and the breast area with the neck. It kills them. They don't suffer. They die right away. It's like the heart. You kill the you.
And how many of these people do you think shooting these shotguns are getting them right there?
They're not. And I think that's part of the problem. A lot of the times the deer will get shot and eventually, you know, run away.
So how would you deal with that problem?
I don't know. That's been an uncommon problem for many, many years. People shooting animals and locking animals up and not feeding them and abandoned animals. You know, we've been fighting that for years. I don't know how to solve that.
Well, this is the problem. I think we're not a question of answers. We're not a country of answers. We have a lot of questions, but we don't have any answers. Mm-hmm. What do you think, Terry?
Any solutions, yeah, to the problem? Is that, excuse me, maybe before we have another question, we got to figure out a solution to...
See, I think hunting is fine.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because
No problem with hunting.
This is what the cycle of life is about. So I'm okay with hunting. I'm just not okay with hunting humans.
Yeah.
But don't you think you should kill the animal correctly?
You know, I don't know. When deer hunters go out there, I can't rationalize what they do. People have been hunting in this country for decades, and to my knowledge, it's not illegal to shoot a deer in the head.
Well, to me, I mean, I'm not a hunter myself, but I don't have nothing against hunting because I know a lot of people that hunt. But I guess they need to change the laws a little bit more. Look how many humans within the past years got shot. I mean, I know little kids got shot because people were not...
Well, yeah, kids and humans I'm with. Yeah. But the deers,
it's just...
I can't worry about protecting the deers because humans and kids are getting shot.
Yeah, right. So they need to update. I don't know what they could do either. Make the suits brighter or make a, you know, the gun won't go off if it's a human in front of it. I don't know.
Well, why are there no laws, though? That's the question.
I don't know. I mean, obviously...
How do you feel about Governor Kasich? I want to get this in before you leave. How do you feel about Governor Kasich and the abortion law here in Ohio, where now he would not... He vetoed the heartbeat law, which ticked people off.
Yeah.
But now he has signed a law that you can't get an abortion in Ohio after 20 weeks.
Kind of his version of it, right? I mean, it's
his version, but definitely long after the heartbeat shows up. So why did he veto that one and do this one?
Okay, so the heartbeats, you can't.
The heartbeat got vetoed. That's no longer a law.
Okay, so that means the baby can't have a heartbeat at all.
If they can detect the heart...
Then you can't have one.
No, that was the law, but he vetoed that. Hey, caller, you're there. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going back to the gun stuff.
Go ahead.
What I was going to tell you, though, is that a couple of the massacres that have happened with the gun, it was teenage boys, and their parents bought them the gun as a hobby to do it with the kid. And so shouldn't the parents be held responsible for buying a kid that they know is a little whack job and letting him have a gun? That's all I had to say.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you.
I agree, caller.
And again, the telephone lines are open, 740-383-9944. You agree with?
I agree with the caller. I think the parents should be held responsible because the parents are the parents until they are 18 years old and they move out on their own. And it's their responsibility that their kids are behaving correctly.
Well, I would agree with that.
Yeah. What do you think, Terry?
But how does that stop adult killings?
That doesn't stop adult killings. They're going to do what they want, I guess.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the abortion thing, let's wrap up on that. What do you think? The heartbeat law is not in effect. That would have been, if as soon as they detect the heartbeat, you can't have an abortion. Governor Kasich vetoed that. But now he has said after 20 weeks, you can't do it, which is 5 months.
That almost seems opposite of,
So after 20 weeks, don't you, okay, I'm trying to follow this here. So if they detect a heartbeat, you can't have one at all.
No. That was what they wanted. And Governor Kasich said, no, we're going to veto
that. That's what I'm saying. He's vetoed it.
Yep.
So, and then after 20 weeks, don't you have a heartbeat after 20 weeks?
Yeah.
So I guess it doesn't make sense to me.
No. He's saying you start to detect a heartbeat, I think, about 4 or 5 weeks in. So you would not have been able to have one after 4 or 5 weeks. Okay. He said no to that. He said you can have one up until 20 weeks.
Oh, my.
You know, abortion is really a touchy subject because there's different ways you can go about it. You know, if people, the person's been raped or...
But how do you know?
You know, I, a lot of people, you know, do abortion of the kid if they have a clipped lip or, you know, if they wanted a girl, they got a boy. If they got a boy, they got a girl. So I don't know, Terry. What do you think about that? I mean, it's a touchy subject, if you ask me.
Yeah, I mean,
but my question is quickly, because we're running out of time, why did Governor Kasich do that? This very Republican governor had a chance to really roll back abortion big time. He rolled it back some. He rolled it back 4 months, but not what he could have.
I really don't know. I mean, I don't know what was going through his mind.
Is he feeling pressure, you know, from somebody? Or
but abortion laws have been changed, though, because the Constitution says you can have an abortion right up until the end, and Governor Kasich has said not after 5 months.
In Ohio.
Right? Yes. Is that right, though? Should you be able on the state level to overturn a Supreme Court decision?
I don't think you should have an abortion all the way up to the final term, because I mean, the baby's already developed at that point, so it's really a human being. It's already.
My question is not what you think, though. My question is, when the Supreme Court makes a law, should you follow it?
No, I think it's wrong.
So if you don't follow the laws,
I don't. I sometimes in the Supreme Court in our justice, they're wrong. I mean, they're always
in your opinion. Some people believe that they're right,
but I think it needs. I'll be honest with you. I think it needs to go state to state. The abortion needs to go from state to state. It doesn't need to be a national law.
And okay, so how do you figure then? How does that stop anything? Because if you're in Kansas and they make it illegal, and it's legal in California, from just driving to California and doing it.
I know that's true, but I don't know.
So state to state is silly.
Well, then fine. The government needs to make it logical. That's not logical to kill a kid all the way up to the final term.
See, but you don't. See, here's the problem. Then you've got to change some laws, because if you're going to say that you're a human being at conception or in your last term, are you paying Social Security? Do you have a Social Security number? Are you getting health care? If the mother would fall down and accidentally kill you terribly, is that murder?
Personally, this is my opinion on abortion. If the mother has an illness and she can't have the kid, that's fine. If she's been raped, I think...
How do you know?
Yeah.
But normally she has normally she got raped. You get a DNC before, you know, after you get raped. You get that DNC.
But how do you know when the woman comes in if she's been raped? The question here is,
I'm sure this isn't there like a kit. I mean, I watch this Law and Order all the time. They do this some kind of.
Do you want
kit.
Somebody to tell you what to do with your body? The federal government tells you how to handle your problems.
Yeah, but why would you want to almost a full term kill a human being?
Well, that's the question. Is it a human being before it comes out of the womb? Because most people, law does not consider you a human being until birth. You don't get a Social Security number till you're born.
Well, final end, it's almost like a human being, right, Terry? I mean, I don't know. What do you think? I mean, if you're almost at your last term,
right? Well, I mean, I mean, I would think that would be a little late to have an abortion too. Yeah. But by the same token, I mean, who are we to judge people? You know, I mean, as far as
I don't know. I mean, I understand people have their own rights; they can do what they want. But I think when you come to another human being,
you know what the problem with this is that men don't have to face it. So how can you impose a law on women?
What I'm saying is, but men are part of the situation. If it's not considered a rape situation, and you're with your girlfriend, and your girlfriend or your wife or whatever you have, they have a kid, and she turns around, she gets mad at you one day, and you know she wanted a boy and you wanted a girl, and you know she's not happy. It should be both of your decisions to make.
But that's not the point.
The point is, the
man doesn't carry the baby for 9 months. The man's life is not at risk with the pregnancy. The man does not have to take time off work to have the baby. The man does not have to go to the hospital to birth the baby. The man does not lose the body because of the baby. The man does not get morning sickness because of the baby. It's what it does to your body. That's where this federal law comes down.
We should just do away with not having kids at all. I mean, to
me, how are you gonna do that?
I don't know.
You want to get rid of guns and that? Good luck.
If the man does not have the decision in the birth of your own kid,
he has a decision. I'll tell you when he has a decision. When he walks in the room that night, cover up. Yeah. That's when he has his decision. And that's all she wrote for this hour, folks. We're coming back. Merry Christmas. Don't go anywhere.